This Week on the Droids, Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 2, or should I say Chapter 10, The Passenger. We're talking only about this brand new episode, an episode we all needed right now to think about being in a galaxy far, far away. All that and more this week on the Droids. Pew. Welcome back to the Droid You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Ryan and Chris, I am Mike. And guys, did we write in Baby Yoda on our ballots? Did anybody do that? No, we didn't do that. We didn't invalidate what we were doing.
No, we did not do that. We're not.
For the record.
No
for,
jokes.
For future civilizations listening to this podcast, that was not the case.
That'd be our future, the different generations from our families.
Yeah, like,
oh
exactly.
God,
yeah.
They did what?
Grandchildren, listen.
Yeah, I have to tell my grandchildren child that I was on, I don't know if I was on the right side of history. I wrote Baby Yoda.
And then I'll say, whatever happened to that ring?
Well, why don't we dive in? Because let's get right into our episode, Chapter 10 breakdown. Mm-hmm. Of course, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, DroidsPod, DroidsPod@gmail.com, YouTube, DroidsPod, that playthrough, Fallen Order. You got to see it. You got to see what Ryan's been up to. Check it out on YouTube.
Batman, and James Bond. There you go.
There
guys,
you got
this
all
is
in.
My favorite episode of this television program.
I was wondering where it's stacked up. I want to start the conversation, though, in one place, which is, I think The Mandalorian in this season, and maybe coming into the conversations out of the first season, they really know what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And having him have one purpose where he gets sidetracked on that purpose for other things is fine. Like the first season when we sidetracked and it was like, well, what does this have to do with what we're doing? But if he's always on his one purpose and he's trying to drive and strive for that, that brings it all together. And this is perfect perfection of what I want to see.
Mike, it's a great point that you articulated beautifully, which is that it was the slightest adjustment, and I loved the first season, but the slightest adjustment, which is literally just that whatever his mission of that episode is just like, it literally starts with like, I'm trying to do this, which is like, you know, he'll say that 10 times until the 10th episode when he gets there.
Do you guys remember?
And like at the end, he got, like, man, he hit a lot of obstacles, but now he's just, like, back on his way.
Do you guys remember?
And the next season, he'll run into, you know, a big monster, and that'll be that.
Well, yeah.
Did you guys remember the video game? Sorry, Ryan, I tried to cut you off there twice.
No, it's
the video game Tapper for Nintendo, where it's, like, the guy's throwing beers down the bar, and you have to kind of pick up the glasses.
I know that better from Wreck-It Ralph. Yeah, better from Wreck-It Ralph.
This season of another Disney property, watch it on Disney Plus. This season is like that, where it's like Baby Yoda is one of those glasses, and then everything else is like he's juggling. And I love that aspect of these two episodes, of the last two episodes, where it's like, oh, Baby Yoda is literally like floating around somewhere that you, every 5 minutes you got to say like, okay, where's he at? I know he's important. Where's he at? And then they did such a good job in this episode of just like, I was genuinely worried when there was a hole in the side of the ship. And like we couldn't find out where Baby Yoda was, but we'll get to that as we talk through it.
Well, there was also it's genuinely. I mean, I described it as delightful, which is a nice word that JJ kind of brought into the Star Wars lexicon to describe it. But I find this show legitimately delightful, and also in terms of imagination, find it legitimately interesting. Like I find the creatures interesting.
Yes,
yes.
You know, it's like when I wish I knew the character's name, but the main alien woman who he's escorting. Like, as soon as she showed up, I was like, the perfect.
Yep.
Like, the design is fun. Yes. She's, like, funny the way she talks, and, like, she has character immediately.
Yes.
As soon as she walks on frame, the great rapport with Amy Sedaris' character. And then they mix that, you know, all this new stuff with, like, such reward for being a Star Wars fan and, like, not slowing down for everybody. I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit, but to me, and I like being rewarded this way. When the X-Wings change their wing formation, I know what that means.
Yep.
He also knows what that means. Yep. You guys know what that means.
Yep.
Someone watching the show might not know exactly that that's like, oh, they're going to combat formation.
They're going into combat,
but they'd probably be like, uh-oh, something's happening. Yeah. And like, that's the perfect kind of thing you're looking for. And the show has tons of it.
They're rewarding us for being fans. And that's what good Star Wars outer universe stuff does.
Yeah,
but you,
the same
you
thing
said
with that, the with the back with the jetpack. It's like we know that he controls it by remote.
Yeah.
It's like that moment still works, so but we're like 1 second ahead of it.
So satisfying.
But it has purpose in the story. Mm-hmm. Is the great.
It's
thing.
Also motivated.
It's not just there to wink at you.
Yes.
It's not just there for us to be like, I know that. Like, I mean, sometimes they do that in the show,
right.
But I think they do a great job of having everything be a part of it. I mean, obviously, R5 not a great example of that.
Or
Sabacc
with the ant alien also.
Yeah, but you know what? That ant alien.
I liked it.
The one thing I really liked was that when we saw the cantina with, good old Count of Valley, it was empty.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what are we doing in an empty cantina? Thank you for filling it back up. Thank you for having multiple creatures in there. I just felt like, ooh, not only is it good and full, it looks the same again. It looks right.
I see all those different aliens. I often wonder, though, if George Lucas is giving like a big cringe, because I know like historically he was never happy with just the different assortment of aliens.
That was like something they found in like a costume shop and they're like, fill it in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And now it's like, oh no, these are canonical creatures and they all have a whole race assigned to them now. So sorry.
I think this show really succeeds at, and I've said this on the show before, like about other aspects of Star Wars, but it succeeds at making me as a fan, and you know, this is just my experience. I hope it makes everyone else feel this way. It makes me as a fan feel grateful to have this,
mm-hmm.
where it's something that delights me that I feel I know about.
Yes.
That I feel like with the X-Wings, or even something like I noticed specifically the X-Wings call them up, you know, they, you know, hail them is what they would say in Star Trek. There you go, Sam. and they say, we're with the New Republic.
Yes.
And then I get to be like, okay, like, you know, just for a split second, I'm like, where are we in the timeline? Okay, like, we're after episode 6, so it's the New Republic before the First Order, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, that's just a nice thing to have. It just, like, stimulates your imagination in a nice way.
Yeah. Oh, and then the little tag of May the Force be with you, like, oh, this will really get them, because this is what we're doing now.
That was fun. Well, so let me ask, is the story group, do we know, is the story group confirmed to be a big part of what's happening with The Mandalorian or no?
I honestly don't know. I don't know
because one
the fabled story.
I don't
want to
cast aspersions on our good Jon Favreau. Jon Favreau, I think as this continues to go on, I give him more credit. But also, with the way these stories have played out, they seem somewhat similar to the Clone Wars. We see Dave Filoni in a more prominent role.
Yeah,
this feels like it's Dave Filoni's series at the very least. When it says written by Jon Favreau, can you write written by Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni? Because
to me,
it's the
condescending thing that people tend to like talk about it like, because I said like a lot, because Dave Filoni was kind of seen as George Lucas's protege, which he was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is that like, Jon Favreau is kind of, now mentoring Dave Filoni in this live action thing. And it's like, I think Dave Filoni is mentoring Jon Favreau in Star Wars a little. And it's like, we should start looking at Dave Filoni as like the Kevin Feige of Mandalorian.
I'm with you
where
there.
It's like, I can't imagine this is all coming from Favreau, because it does remind me so much of Clone Wars, which I've been watching a lot more of. It's fantastic, of course. To me, I'm like, this is Filoni through and through. And like, it's through a Favreau lens, which is, generic. But
he's created something that we're all enthralled with.
Right.
We are absolutely. And I do think that he is. I would not put him in a Ron Howard group, because I think he is the best version of that.
Mm-hmm.
If
mm-hmm.
that makes sense.
Yeah, he's kind of like he's the generation outcome of watching all of the things that like Lucas and those guys made. Like, I feel like,
yeah, I don't think there's anything specifically distinctive about Jon Favreau's filmmaking style, except to say that his movies are really well made.
Mm-hmm.
They're very formalist. Yeah. He shoots things in a very clear and coherent way, and he is a good storyteller.
Yeah.
Like, so it's just like what it is.
Yeah. And I think they probably have a nice little like carrot and stick with Dave Filoni, where it's probably like, oh, hey, do you want to be in the episode or do you want to write the episode? You know, 100% of the time, he's going to be like, put me in that X-Wing. Like, that's
no,
not fair.
No, he's doing both.
I love that they looked like old not fair. X-Wing pilots.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was actually wondering, have we seen that other actor before? I mean, I guess he's been in other things, but I don't... Not anything else in Star Wars, I don't think.
I didn't recognize him, but that doesn't
And I also didn't know if he was playing a notable Star Wars, like Clone Wars character or anything like that. Or not Clone Wars, yeah. or yeah, Rebels. Could have been.
Like he was like, I'm the Hedge Antilles.
Yeah.
Hedge. But I also, you know, it's the thing of Dave Filoni lives and breathes Star Wars. Like that is basically what he wants his life to be, is to focus on Star Wars. That's just not who Jon Favreau is.
Right. He's got other projects.
You can only have somebody who's going to be the Kevin Feige of it if they have that viewpoint of Filoni. And I love that. And I think he's the right person to be part of this. And Favreau helped pushing it along. Great.
Yeah.
Also, you know, should we, know we this episode was directed by Peyton Reed.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Who directed the Ant-Man movies Bring It On and stuff. Who's like a really well-paced, like, he knows, talk about a dude who delivers like a good story
He like knows action comedy too. Like he knows just the right amount of time to cut the things. And then he loves just like the little, he also will just like let a scene bleed like 5 seconds too long to show something weird or awkward. And I love that.
Oh, and this episode was weird.
It was lovely in its weirdness. Real quick, when Peyton Reed took over for Edgar Wright, I was so mad at him. I was like, you're not Edgar Wright. And as time has gone on, I'm like, you know what? This guy.
He's another guy that I would never see something and be like, that's definitely Peyton Reed.
I did, in the middle of this episode,
go, who directed this one? This is really good. And I looked it up and I saw Peyton Reed and I went, oh, yeah, he's good.
It also...
like, he's just good.
It looked beautiful also. I think they got away with a lot because there's a lot of flying and a lot of scenic shots. And so it made it feel very expansive. But, like, this episode looked, I think, production value-wise, like one of their best.
Well, they did this magical thing where they were like, I mean, I guess the spiders would have cost them money, but they had this really, what I thought was very enthralling chase sequence, which we have not seen the likes of on this show.
No.
But they kind of spent all their money up front, and then they were stuck in the ship in an ice cavern. And it was like, that was great, too.
Yeah.
But I think that they've learned things. They learned a lot from the first season, and we talked about it in the first episode of season two, is they've blended together the volume and these expansive spaces and making it look like it's more epic than it is, that it's just kind of impressive and fun to watch and be like, oh, they're like, yeah, you know what? That looked good, but we can make it look better. We can make it look better this time around.
I mean,
around.
I'm sure they've shifted.
And we should just... Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm sure they shifted some money from production pauses. Give Mando, see what they could do with $20 more million an episode. You know, I'm sure they've moved some things around.
I was going to say that we should quickly, I mean, it's a quick rundown. The Mandalorian is told that there's Mandalorians on a different, in a different system, told by Amy Sedaris' character. And she tasks him, with delivering a woman, an alien, and her unfertilized eggs to deliver to her husband before the eggs, die so that they can carry on her bloodline. And while he's on his way with her to do that, the New Republic calls him and he doesn't have the right credentials and they kind of chase him into an ice planet and they fall through an ice shelf and they're kind of wrecked. That's basically what happens in the episode.
They recognize that he was part of the prison break.
Right.
And that his ship, the Razor Crest, was part of that. And that's why
there's this wonderful line where he says it's surplus empire. Yeah. Because they're like, your ship is an empire ship. And he says it's surplus, which implies there's like a market for you know, the empire doesn't exist anymore. We have all these ships to do something with, which I thought was just a brilliant piece of very quick world building.
Yes.
But let's not forget the cold open, because I think all I like about the cold open is that they pulled the trick again from what the Ewoks did in Return of the Jedi in terms of a speeder bike.
Yep.
You know, you need to take down a speeder bike is a good rope.
Just a good rope will take down an AT-ST, an AT-AT, and a speeder bike. That was great. I love the little trap. Just like a group of henchmen just kind of doing their own, like, what was their goal? Yeah. They knew he had Mando
kind of scavengers.
Arm. Yeah.
If you want to speak about scavengers, that is the same as the droid-esque from The Force Awakens who yells at Rey when she's cleaning up whatever she scavenged.
Yes, that is true. I recognize him a mile away. He walks by and goes, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, when she's like scrubbing the things with the brush, right? Yeah. With the old lady across from
Ryan, you nailed it. Or Chris, you nailed it, because I was like, in my head, I really want to try to do that noise. I can't do it.
Voiced, I believe, by Richard Ayoade.
Yeah. Oh, no, that was later in the episode.
Was that?
Yeah,
which
later in the episode is when Richard Ayoade comes back the droid from the Prison Break episode.
That was a phenomenal use of droid technology. Like, we can't understand you, but droids, as we know, are capable of speaking 3 million different languages, according to C-3PO.
So they also did this great thing that I really loved, and like maybe I'll, you know. Please email me if this is a problematic thing to say. But I think that, like, in terms of steps taking in genre storytelling, they introduce... She's literally credited as the Frog Lady. So that's... I'm using that correctly, I suppose.
That's not a colloquial.
They introduce the Frog Lady as kind of like... We see her. He doesn't speak her language. And they kind of present her as a sort of, like... I don't, like, matronly. Helpless. Like, she's kind of along for the ride. Mm-hmm. She has, like, her eggs. It's all she cares about. And they kind of call us out as the audience for... Eventually, we find out that she's, like, an incredible shot with her gun. Yeah. And that she can, like, rewire droids. And it calls us out to be like, why would you assume that because this character is innocent, you know, I'm sure that there's, implicit kind of sexism involved in this, and like, you know, in how these characters are portrayed, you know, and like, why would you assume that she wouldn't be able to rewire a droid and be incredibly competent in a fight and things like that? And I think that making the audience face that directly is very useful.
Mm-hmm. I think that's like, it's such a great kind of Star Wars inclusivity story too, where it's like, you never underestimate anyone kind of in this universe, as you shouldn't in any life, just be if there's a language barrier, be it someone from a different background or you, whatever. So they were kind of introduced this alien. I mean, the fact that they call her Frog Lady, and I think the fact that she's almost just kind of like, sometimes with Star Wars, there's this thing where like, it's like, what's the bounds between an alien and like an alien animal? Almost like, it's like Goofy has a dog.
Sure.
So you never know.
Why is Goofy a dog and Pluto a dog?
Exactly. So you never quite know what's going on there. And so it's like, you kind of make the assumption. I thought she was like, oh, well, maybe she's kind of like, they really haven't humanized the Jawas too much. But like, I thought like, oh, maybe she's just that kind of level alien. There's like that level of Star Wars alien. So then when she's like started firing her gun at like protecting her, like she wanted to protect her children. She was smart. She was capable. She knew, like, she had a plan. She knew the stakes, and she knew how to play Mando. Like that's a full fledged character.
Yeah. And I just want to make it clear, I'm not excusing myself from that kind of bias in watching the show.
For sure.
Like, I noticed it, and it's like, part of it, you know, may be bias that exists in me, and part of it may be that I have expectations based on what genre stories have given me before. Mm-hmm. Then I'm like, oh, they're just kind of doing a standard kind of like cut and paste, like mother figure.
Right.
Which I'm glad they did not do.
Did she fire her weapon before she saved Baby Yoda? Because I didn't think she did.
Not once.
No.
But they had that great moment where they were running and she started running like a frog.
Okay, you said that. That was actually what I thought you were going to get to right away, because that moment where I was like, whoa, that really caught me off guard, and it made me be like, wow, this is awesome. And I love that she's making that move. I think we've pretty much set up the early part. It was great, as you said, to have a chase. It wasn't like an actual space battle, but it was a nice chase. And as you said, those effects were spectacular. Yeah. It just made you feel like you were back watching a movie.
And it was cool because his first fancy move didn't work.
Yeah.
Yep.
I thought that was great.
Right. Yep.
Star Wars. Yeah, it seemed, and then they were on their way, and they're like, "Up, here's a trench. We're heading into a trench."
They even had it on the little computer screen in the X-Wing, like... Those X-Wings designed for trenches.
And also, I love that it introduces, there's like something that makes me feel like this sense of pride that I understand how sci-fi ships work. Where like, I was watching it and I was kind of talking, you know, Nicole was sitting there, but I was kind of talking to myself. And I was like, well, the cabin can be unpressurized, but the cockpit is pressurized. So they could technically fly
That's
with
awesome.
Just the cockpit. Like, and it's like, that's just like a nice thing to have. That it's like, oh, this world has been well established enough for me to understand that.
I don't know if it was just the weight of the world around me currently, but I was legitimately stressed when I saw that hole. I was like, well, I in my head, I was like, maybe they're going to use the spiders to like cast a web on the hole. Yeah, like I was just trying to like, I was like, there's no way you can fix this. And I was like getting worried. I was like, oh, well,
there
the
was this moment I had.
Yeah.
Quick anecdote. There was this moment I had in college where it was when Battlestar Galactica's final season was airing. It was my senior year of college, and I had a roommate who, for his own reasons, he wasn't really allowed to go out on weekends for a little bit, and so he'd watch Battlestar Galactica with me, and I was watching an episode where the hull was breached and they needed to make an FTL jump, a faster than light jump, and spoiler alert. And, you know, in the bridge, they're like, all right, like, get ready to jump. And he said he thought it was so funny because in a moment of obliviousness, like, everyone else in the room, like, disappeared to me. I screamed out, they're not even pressurized. And he was like, that was so funny because it's like you were not talking to anyone. It was only for me. And that's how I felt during this episode.
Yeah.
I was like, there's a hole in the hull that I don't even know how you fix that. You can't pressurize.
That's a hard feeling to create in a show where that just means they have made a world that is so believable that you disconnect for a moment and their stakes become your stakes. And that's beautiful storytelling.
That's just world building. No. It's great stuff.
You talked about the stress of it and the stress of the spiders. Initially, I was like, I know what's coming. Okay, now I'm uncomfortable. Now this is really getting to me. And then the moment where the second giant spider takes the ship down and that started to come through the hull, I'm like, I don't know. They're not going to get out of this one. It's not, I don't know how they get out of this. There's not really an option.
How do we feel about this trend over the last, I'd say, 10 years? Of buttholes being a huge part of monster design?
I don't understand it. I think that
you mean the teeth?
Just their mouth.
All right, Mike, don't act like you don't know what I'm talking about. Teeth, but near the teeth.
I think some agencies sold a bunch of studios a ton of spider monsters and butthole monsters and was like, here you go, you'll be good for 20 years.
I think it's that everyone listened to the Star Trek 09 commentary where that big red monster in that movie, they said its mouth was based on a bifurcated anus. That's not like, that's true.
Wow.
And I think everyone was like, whoa, that's right.
I guess, I mean, if you want a monster, that would be,
if there's a big monster in a show, I guarantee you that there is an aspect of it that looks like a butthole.
I don't know how to follow that up. But
well, the way you follow,
Mike,
I do want to say,
asks me which part I'm talking about.
I love that they brought it back from the Clone Wars, though, and especially even from Rebels.
Yeah.
Because there's that two episode arc where they're trying to commune with the spiders to keep them away from the base. It was just that design, which is a Ralph McQuarrie design that was brought into Clone Wars and Rebels.
So he's the guy.
That's where it came from.
Here's the one who had the fest. Actually, you know what? I don't think you ever see the underside of the spiders in Ralph McQuarrie's sketch.
Well, I'm not talking about the spider's butthole.
But I thought,
talking
I just
about
like
a butthole
that.
Being used for inspiration for parts of a spider.
I'm trying to keep this show on line.
this is going to be my Batman and James
the
Bond.
The Red Band episode.
Oh, no. I just love that they brought it back, and that it continues to, it's like, hey, this worked really well in animation. Let's do it again, and we're going to do it in a different way. And it was really rewarding to me to see something that I'm like, I know this. I'm already afraid of this, and now it's terrifying.
Exactly, again. Yeah. Like they did make those spiders actually dangerous in Rebels and Clone Wars. Like there's real stakes. Like no one wanted to run into them. They pose a real threat.
Isn't there like a full episode where Obi-Wan and Anakin are stuck in a cave trying to get away from them?
And they can't do it. The fact that their shells are soft was truly disturbing. those things, I was really, really concerned when he touched that and it like deflated. I was like, oh no, what is this? Baby Yoda eating everything. Got to be careful what you got around.
Can
Baby
we talk
Yoda.
About that for a second? Okay. So first I want to say, I just discovered. So, Misty Rosas, who played the Frog Lady, is also the person in the suit for Queel.
Yep.
Oh,
wow. That's really cool.
Didn't mean to step on you on that one. Sorry about that.
No. That's just a cool thing to know. So, with the eggs and Baby Yoda eating them, Did you guys think with the way it was introduced, I could not tell, and it still could happen because we don't know what the next episode will be, if it'll kind of continue this.
Mm-hmm.
I could not tell if they were setting up that, if it was like a bit that they were setting up, that it's like, oh, he's doing the Force, we're expecting that he's like communing with the eggs and then he eats them and that's funny, which is a little weird.
Yeah.
Or I was expecting when she was incubating the eggs that we were going to find out that Baby Yoda was like swallowing them to like incubate them.
Oh, interesting.
And keep them warm, and he was going to like throw them up into the pool and show that he was keeping them safe, because they show him interact in a way. Like, I thought, I was like, if they're establishing that these eggs mean everything to this woman.
Yes.
And we're like buying into that, because then it's almost too dark for me to believe that Baby Yoda's just eating them.
I think Baby Yoda thought they were, I mean, I think it kind of speaks to just, is Baby Yoda just this kind of like benevolence, like force? It's like learning thing. I mean, it's like a baby. It wanted a pickled egg. I don't, it put it in his mouth.
Yeah, no, I didn't know what they were presenting to me, so it was a little strange, like, rhythmically.
I mean, I think if Mando was doing it, then I think we would know. I think it would feel real bad and dark, but I think the fact that Baby Yoda did it was kind
of
like...
Well, and they make you feel better because of how many there are.
Yes, and he also eats the spiders.
Plenty of eggs.
He also eats the spider.
Yeah. I didn't see it as dark, and I definitely saw it as the former.
Because again, it's not like he was eating, like, they were unfertilized eggs. It's not like he was eating.
Right. I was like kind of with you too, especially that they were like, these are her last ones ever. Like, this is what
what it was. Yeah, I know that she had a limited amount of these that were very precious to her, and he was dispatching. It could have been anything.
I think it's
like
just
if they were like, these are my mother's pearls, and he ate her pearls.
Just high stakes comedy. That's it.
but I would say I don't think he was communing with them. He was trying to just move them.
Yes.
And I think he was moving the eggs closer to him.
Right.
I don't think he was using the Force to.
Right. That
I
crossed
just
my thought
didn't
at
know
first.
What the show wanted me to think about.
I thought we were going to start to get like a Golden Touch story where it was like at the end of the season, we were going to see like, oh, Baby Yoda touched all these things. Then all of a sudden, at one point in time, they were all going to like bloom or blossom or like something. Like, that's what
you mean like Groot?
Yes,
genuinely thought that like maybe this is almost embarrassing. I genuinely thought that like Baby Yoda was like communing with like the organisms that make up the eggs.
I'm with you, Ryan.
Like,
I thought,
you know,
the same,
like the way that like he would commune with a pen.
I thought
or
the
something
same thing.
Like that he was like, these things need to be warm, and he was like swallowing them to keep them warm. That's genuinely I thought that would be the payoff.
It could still potentially happen.
Like, it could still potentially. I don't think it's going to. And like the eating of the eggs was funny too.
Yes.
And like we saw later that she had plenty of them, so it's fine.
And then at the end of the episode, she was.
But
like,
it was like a strange thing to establish, like that these were like this. She was protecting them so intensely,
and that's why you have Peyton Reed direct that episode. That's right. Like that's his joke. Like that's.
And
that
then I'm
perfect.
Happy that that they went so weird with it, because I'm like, that's so weird and gross, and it's like funny.
So we've learned pearls and eggs in the Mando universe are real big, delicious items. Like that's what people want, and it's weird and disgusting, and hopefully when we're at Galaxy's Edge we'll be cracking into a lot of those.
Well, speaking of Galaxy's Edge, and actually there's a bigger question I want to ask all of you, but I do say Galaxy's Edge as we get the moment. Nice little roasting off a pod racer. Mm-hmm. A little bit familiar from Galaxy's Edge.
Yep. That looked pretty good too.
It looked tasty. Pretty tasty. No maggots.
Yeah, a little nice, good sweating on it. You know,
no
good,
maggots.
I genuinely wondered. I'm glad you said that, Mike. I was like, I wonder what they used for that prop. Like, is it actually meat? It'd be like a lot of meat to waste.
I don't know what they.
It
did.
Looked like it was digital.
Yeah,
it was digital, maybe.
But they really, it looked tasty.
I was wondering. That's a fun little callback to the first episode too, because I was like, what's he gonna do with all that meat? Like, we don't need to take his mask off.
Well, I think it was the Tusken Raiders had the most of the meat.
Yeah.
But I really wonder what you both thought when they were at dire straits of who was going to come and save the day, because you knew that they were not going to save the day. That felt like, to me, an appropriate moment that a Jedi might have appeared who was hiding out on the planet.
Wow.
Because we've seen that many times before in Star Wars, and we know there are some Jedi on the way. I guess the only reason you wouldn't think that is because later on in the series or in this season, because of the promo we saw, we know he gets told about the myth of the Jedi, and that hasn't happened yet. But I thought, like, ooh, could this be Ahsoka? Could Ahsoka come and take out the spider and save the day?
Wow.
But then blaster fire tells you otherwise.
Mike, will this be Spock Prime?
The
Spock Prime.
I'm you. Mike, I think you kind of nailed something there, especially when we were talking about the spiders, because those were featured in Clone Wars. I think this was a complete misdirection, like a distraction play for the series. Like, I think...
Interesting.
I think they geared us up for this because it's going to happen again at some point. Like, I think
you have another dire moment.
Yes, I think you could put the pieces together to make the assumption that, like, oh, Ahsoka has to be in this cave. They're talking about the spiders that were integral to a lot of the Jedi, like, situations in Clone Wars and Rebels. They're stranded. They don't know what to do. Like, who gets you out of situations like that? It's not two X-Wings. They fly around. How they got in that little hole, who knows? I can't. I've been playing Star Wars... squadrons, I could never control that. That's impossible.
Nicole said something very cool to me where the shot comes and I was like, is it the X-Wing pilots? Like, is that Rebel fire? And she said, can't you tell by the sound? And I was like, wow, that's cool.
That's awesome.
It is fun to just...
And then it's funny that they genuinely just leave them.
Yeah.
Well, he says, like, how about I give you the money, essentially, and, like, you help me with this. And they were like, how about we never see you again? And just took off.
But I love that. I love the old, like, haggling and the respect for what he had done to actually turn in the three bounties and how they were like, oh, we knew you had done some positive things.
They were speaking some weird type of, like, Vanguard English, too. Like, they were like, it was a very, like, forced dialect. Like, is that how they talk in the New Republic?
I don't know if maybe I agree with you. It may have just been bad dialogue.
It could have been. But the way it was like, how say you? Like, they were saying things like that. Like, it was kind of odd.
I didn't notice it. Well, it just felt...
I think I could diagnose this.
Yeah.
He said, like, what say you? I give you the bounty. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
And they were like, what say you? We don't.
Okay.
Like, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a joke.
They weren't like, what say ye? You know.
Yeah, he wasn't... I mean, he wasn't, like, juggling things.
But it was fun, as we talked about before,
like, it wasn't
to think about the placement of this before the First Order and wonder again if we're going to see the First Order rise within this series at some point. I guess we saw that a bit in the Resistance, but it's just kind of fun to think about where this is and the New Republic trying to make its way and how do they stamp out a potential rebirth of evil.
I want to see whoever had to dig the hole for the laser in Starkiller Base. You know what I mean? Who had to start that thing?
Yeah. But it was Timothy.
Any other things that stood out to you this episode? The one thing I felt, I was like, wow, there's such great kind of thriller horror elements. Mm-hmm. I really feel like the show has shown us almost everything in this first season and two episodes because it had such great emotional heart at different times in the first season. And now it's getting into like this well-oiled machine of great action, adventure, horror thriller. And I'm like, I don't know what else I want from the show
right now. Yeah, from the trailer that we haven't seen yet. Like, he reconnects with Gina Carano and Carl Weathers, I believe, because there's that whole sequence in the trailers with the speeder bikes that we haven't seen. And we haven't seen who we believe is Sabine Wren. Mm. Right?
Oh, wait. I thought we saw Horatio Sands, blue character alien.
Is he in the trailer?
It appears to be him with Gina Carano and the Mandalorian as they're driving away from the speeder bikes.
Oh, cool. All right. Yeah. All right. So we haven't seen a lot.
Wow.
So, kind of cool thing also in this, we saw the, I don't know what the exact name of the droid is, the binoculars droid, who was also in A New Hope, was with Amy Sedaris.
I really Amy. I'm happy she was around for a few episodes.
She was more fun. I liked her in this episode. I love that character.
It's so weird. And like, just, she's so funny, and just to see her just playing this character, I just love it every time.
The relationship writing, and I don't mean like romantic relationship, their friendship writing that they're doing between those two is so good. Just even small things, the fact that he said, like, you vouch for her, like, he's implying that he trusts her. And that's like a small thing that reads to an audience.
Yeah.
And then it's very funny where he was, you know, it was just like a funny, it was a nice banter scene.
Yeah.
I have to say, I'm very much looking forward to watching this episode again. I'll probably do it tonight. It was so much fun, and it really felt like the perfect escape from everything. We talked about that with episode one, but I felt like this was even more so. I'm thrilled at what we've seen so far. It just feels like this show is getting better. I can't be happier about Star Wars in terms of streaming right now. Like, they couldn't be. I don't know what they could be doing better than they're doing right now. Yeah. The only thing, there's one thing that we're missing, and I don't know that we need it, And maybe we're going to get some of it because of Ahsoka and because of the conversations. Mm. There's not a lot to the lore. Mm-hmm. And we don't necessarily need the lore to be expanded in this show.
Right.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I think I'm fine to ride current lore status. I don't know. I feel like let the movies break that story. I think I'm fine just kind of playing with the tools we got because it's where we're having fun.
I think everything now, because of basically the MCU and this kind of like we need to build a universe thing, everything is so lore heavy that I think that's part of what I find the show genuinely refreshing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, it's just like straightforward. They're not like trying to sell me something like, except for toys, of course. But,
I had my Baby Yoda delivered today.
I have a Lego Baby Yoda ready to build. Their universe exists already. Yes. And they're not trying to occupy every corner of it.
Yeah.
They're just trying to tell like this story, which I find very refreshing.
They got nice stuff. Use it.
And to bring that back around, it's just like it's so refreshing when it's also with the purpose that it now has of delivering Baby Yoda, because it wasn't as refreshing in episode 4 where he went to the squid planet or whatever the planet was that Gina Carano was in. It was more like, what are we doing? And now it's like, oh, we know exactly what we're doing and it feels so good.
Yeah, and it was like, you know, you articulated beautifully and it was such a small adjustment, seemingly, to the construction of the show. Which is just like, keep him moving forward.
Yes.
Yep.
It doesn't matter if he runs into all these obstacles. That's like dramatic rules.
That's the show.
Well, and this is also where you weave in and out with all these other characters that can be in there for one episode. And, you know, Grand Moff Gideon is still out there and you can have that bit where maybe you have 3 episodes with Moff Gideon and then you get back to him following the mission he needs to be on. Like, that's fine. That's great. That's what they've done with the animated shows before. And that all works.
Because genuinely, it's focused enough that, you know, if there, say there are 6 seasons of The Mandalorian eventually, you could say, oh, season 2, is that the one where he's trying to get Yoda to the Jedi?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to like season 1, is that the one where he meets Baby Yoda things?
Yeah. I think they had to sell us a lot. They had to build up what a Mandalorian is. Like, we, as fans, we have a lot of that lore where we understood it. I think they just needed to, like, they made a little short timeline of here's the stakes of the Mandalorian, here's what they are, here's how they work. And then that's season 1. Like, I think that's okay. And then the elements that we loved were the journey of it all. And then now season 2, they don't have to do that because we already got all that stuff done. So it's like the front loading's done. We're ready just to throw them in situations and see what happens.
One last thing before we're done here, and I know we're wrapping up, but I do want to say it's like we had majority of this episode with obviously a Mandalorian in his helmet and 2 animatronic/CGI characters, and it all worked so well, and it was still wonderful. And Ryan,
no
I know you
human faces.
I know you love animatronics, and the frog lady, she looked beautiful. And then when Baby Yoda is walking through the snow and up to the egg and then eating the egg, I think it's a combo of CGI and animatronic. Because it looked like he was a little bit more motion in his face, but it looked so good. It looked amazing.
Mike, yes.
I'm so glad you said that because it shows we're on the same page. Again, Nicole was very kind to listen to my musings during this episode. When he was walking that way, I turned to her and I said, I love this. He's walking like a Muppet. Which is like, it's a little better, but it's literally like you see, it's not really someone's hand, but literally just doing like the up and down as they move forward.
His shoulders move. It looks,
Yeah, and I was just like, that's perfect. That's all you need. Your imagination does the rest. You don't even need to see his feet.
They're remembering what they did with actual Yoda, or they're passing down the learnings of that, and it's wonderful.
Yeah. And
there were
moments where you could tell they CGI'd him moving, and it looked good, too.
Yeah.
It was just good. You know, I think they're doing it all right.
There's a physicality that just makes those kind of things feel real, and, like, I don't know what it is, but it hits the right chord, and then you just connect with it better.
Well, you connect with it, and, like, with a Baby Yoda, it's... The more you feel like you could reach out and pick up Baby Yoda, the more it works. Yeah.
Yep.
So,
guys, and I have done that. I have one looking at me right now. So,
guys, Star Wars is weird, and Star Wars is great, and it's a wonderful time. It's really a wonderful time in Star Wars. Now, the rest of the world, the real world, we'll talk about that later.
We're working.
That is going to do it for the droids you're looking for, a Star Wars podcast. We'll catch you again next week for Chapter 3 of Season 2, or I guess it's Chapter 11, Episode 3. Ooh, that's pretty good. Ludwig, when did you get here?
That's good.
The music was awesome in this, too,
Yeah, it was great.
All right.
All right. Thanks for joining us. And, of course, email us at droidspod@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts and weigh in on some of our different comments. We'd love to hear if you agree, disagree. Put it all out there. Let us know. This has been the Droid You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. What they throw?
Annie?
What's up, droid heads and droidettes? It's SM2187. You can call me Sam. Sorry I couldn't be on the pod today, guys. I think we hinted last week that I have my own the child now that I'm caring and feeding for and cleaning up after. So just a busy afternoon. Couldn't make the record, but I did manage to once again in the solitude of my car during alternate side park and get to watch my absolute favorite episode of The Mandalorian for the whole series so far. This was what a belter. What a, you know, look, here's all I gotta say. You're doing an episode where you gotta deal with bugs, you gotta deal with a ton of little tiny little bugs scrambling, crawling all over everything, and who sends you there? A giant ant? A giant man ant? Man, alien. Hats off to Peyton Reed. Great job, great humor, consistent tone, consistent characterization throughout the whole episode. This is what I want to see. A loving, heroic Mando, an adorable and kind of like slightly disgusting baby Yoda, and then just the weirdness of Star Wars. That frog lady hopping. What a delight. I didn't even know I was looking for that. We got some prime Filoni action. Top to bottom, this is my favorite episode of the series. Second place goes to episode 2 of season 1. So there's something, you know, Rick Famuyiwa's was my highlight last year. So I'm liking these episode 2s. Okay, guys, that was a quick dispatch. Got to go back to, I don't know, changing diapers or something. But, love to all my droid fans out there. This has been SM2187. You can call me Sam. Signing off.
I didn't have a joke. I got nothing. I'm like, crate dragon meat?